This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on September 11th, 2010, here in Japan. It is still the 10th of September 2010 in the United States, and today I am talking to Lieutenant Eric Schein, one of our regular guests, who is available at martiallaw911.com and crossingtherubicon.org. He hosts a RBM radio program called In the Zone at 9 p.m. Central on Saturdays. Lieutenant Schein, thank you for joining us once again on the Corbett Report.
Thanks a lot, James. Appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you here as always. And I guess today we would like to talk a little bit about the subject of Germany, Germania, and monarchies. I don't know where you'd really like to start with this topic, but why don't you start by telling us a little bit about why you want to get into this topic?
Well, I think people need to understand, before they can solve any of the problems in the world, they need to understand where they're coming from. And they're an extension of history, what's come before. You know, our laws, 80% of our legal codes here in the United States come from under the three Napoleons and Bismarck. Bismarck was the, I want to say prime minister, but not. He was the chancellor of Prussia before Prussia was assimilated into and became part of Germany and German federations, German republics. And then he was the chancellor there as well. And he did some interesting things that are going on here in the United States with health benefits for Germans back in the late 1800s, that
You were about to talk about the Health Insurance Act of 1883,
they're analogous to what is going on with the recent quote-unquote health care reform, which is not really about reform, it's about imposing, you know, a nationwide system upon people that had already been constructed fairly, you know, pretty much by the medical industry itself. They've already been putting a big push out there about, you know, they're in a new world. In an e-world, you know, a worldwide web, there is no more privacy, no more privilege. And you've got companies like Facebook that have been going out there and intentionally breaking the rights of privacy and privilege to their own members, who they had, you know, basically set up certain rules, where the owner of Facebook, to make a lot of money, went public with it and basically disclosed all of the private information, who was contacting who, any pictures, records, or more, and basically disclosed it to the world intentionally to break down those walls of privacy and privilege and do this intentionally.
And if I could just interject there for people who don't know about that, obviously Mark Zuckerberg is the founder of Facebook, and he was some email exchanges that he had with one of his fellow students at Harvard, where he called the people who were actually giving information through Facebook to, quote directly, dumb fucks. And he was basically bragging about how people were giving him all sorts of information. And then he was later found to have actually used the login details from Facebook members to log into their private email accounts. And this is the person that people are entrusting with this 500 million user base on Facebook.
Right. These people are sociopaths. For want of a better word, they are. They're criminals. And what they like to do is to bring together large collectives, you know, like sheeple, the adage, the collective, whether it's an insurance company or bank or whatever. The bigger the pot, the more that they can fleece, the more that they can steal and do it without anyone noticing. But the people behind this have been doing this for a very long time. And many of these rackets, like, you know, talk about dead peasants insurance, are very, very old practices. Even the troops, like the Romans, the Roman soldiers used to get to the point of rebellion because the money that was to go to them for their pay would get, you know, a little bit taken out here, a little bit taken out there. Well, services, well, we got to transport it. And by the time the money of their pay actually made it to them, it was a fraction of what they were promised to be paid. And this is the same thing going on now with our own troops. But the people behind this are very good at what they do. And they're, you know, what's the old adage of those who do not know history are doomed to repeat it. And you really need to read a lot. to really understand and you know what's going on, and take any and all information with a grain of salt to a point, but you know, assimilate it, take it in, think about it, digest it, and give it time, and the truth will be revealed the more you read. There's a book, and I've mentioned it before, about it's called The Shield of Achilles, War, Peace, and the Course of History. It's by Philip Bobbitt. I want to read this one little paragraph, but it gets into the whole thing of what is really going on. And they're trying to create a new constitutional order, a new world constitutional order, a new world order. And you really have to understand that this is L. Ron Hubbard newspeak, you know, in the mindset of Dianetics and Scientology. And there are good things about, and I'm not knocking Scientology or whatever, to each his own, and there are good things about it. The Scientologists are very adamant against psychiatry, against psychology, because it's being used as a weapon against not only the American people, but the people of the world, whether it be propaganda, whether it be marketing, whether it be commercials and more. I'm trying to think of... there's a couple instances that come to mind. Goebbels, of course, or Goebbels, and what he had done with propaganda, which gets into psychology, which gets into psychiatry, which gets into the human mind.
And right, those, and of course, Goebbels, one of his heroes was Edward Bernays, who was the American nephew of Sigmund Freud.
Right, and people study Bernays for marketing and other... program.
Exactly.
And so, you know, and you've heard even the Indians used to call the white man a guy who speaks with forked tongue. You know, he says one thing but means another. And I had an example of that where I was accused of barratry, a term that I had never heard or I'd forgotten, which is basically where an individual damages the cargo or vessel of an owner. And because of that, they charge you with barratry. Well, the alternative definition is insistent, persistent legal proceedings. And so I learned the dual definition there that they had kind of thrown out at me, unknowns to myself until I had better educated myself. But in this book, he talks about the historic consequences of the Long War. And in it, it's defined as 1914, to 1990, World War I, Germany, to 1990, the fall of the wall in Berlin, in Germany, and the reunification of Germany. And he outlines in the book as well, and I don't like this guy. I don't like what he has to say because he is a royalist. He is a loyalist. When you read his bio, this guy has tight ties, just like Kissinger, to London, England, the United Kingdom. And he is advocating for, and you'll hear it in his words here, these are his words, a new constitutional order, which is a worldwide system of kingdoms. And that's why I go into Germany and the history of it, because when you look at Charlemagne in the year 800 or thereabouts, he brought together for the first time in history that region, which is Germany, German federations, German republics, Luxembourg, Liechtenstein, Austria, Bavaria, Prussia back then, and more, the Rhinelands, and brought them under one leadership. And European history, if not world history, has revolved around one thing and one thing only, the unification or reunification of Germany. Because after Charlemagne died, it was seen that, and this is by Italy, by Rome, that Germany was far too powerful, that this region was far too powerful, and this included Switzerland as well, to remain intact. So they broke it up. And ever since, it's been about bringing together, whether in reality, virtually, whether you want to look at it as being the European Union now and a lot of other nation states. And I think I brought this up to you before, I'm not sure if I've done it on the show or on your program, was that now, think about this, it's not just the European nation and all those member states that are in the European Union, but the United Kingdom, which is 54 member nation states of the, you know, it's a United Kingdom, it's their kingdoms, have been infused or taken in by Britain being taken into and being part of the European Union. So now it's not just, and that includes the Falkland Islands. So the Falkland Islands are part of the European Union now. That includes your country, Canada, that is now part of the European Union. And it's just, I mean, people aren't thinking about these things deep enough. But let me read this. And this is from part three from, I think it's about page 210 in his book, The Historic Consequences of the Long War. Thesis, the market state is superseding the nation state as a consequence of the end of the Long War. The end of the Long War has been quickly followed by the emergence of a new constitutional order. This new form is the market state, whereas the nation state, with its mass free public education, universal franchise, and social security policies, promise to guarantee the welfare of the nation. The market state promises instead to maximize the opportunity of the people and thus tends to privatize many state activities and to make voting and representative government less influential and more responsive to the market. The United States, a principal innovator in the development of the market state, must fashion its strategic policies with this fundamental constitutional change in mind.
Quite disturbing, quite disturbing. And that ties into absolutely so many of the things that we've seen and has been time and time again vindicated by so many different people. Just one that comes to mind, obviously, Lieutenant General Smedley Butler.
Well, and I was thinking of the CFRs and Council on Foreign Relations when you were bringing up Smedley Butler. And it is, it, you know, and Eisenhower even said it's the military, industrial, congressional complex. It is the, and you could throw religion in there as well. It is the corporations, the large corporations. It is the government, large government. It is the unions. It is the churches, all of the churches. And it is our leadership in our representative government who are all married together, literally, who have family members dancing within all these halls of powers who are working to steal your life, to steal your benefits, to steal your statutory rights. They're called entitlements. Bush has even referred to them. To steal the fruits of your labor and to do it with smoke and mirrors, the sleight of hand, administrative, legal mumbo jumbo, bureaucratic, you know, magic.
Exactly, exactly right. And that's something that that some people are attempting to address directly, like the Freeman on the Land movement. But I guess I would assume that you don't necessarily go with that way of approaching the issue.
Be specific.
There's a movement of people who basically argue that all of the legal mumbo-jumbo are fictitious entities that have been created on paper, legal personhood and all of that, and that the way to get around that is basically to argue from the perspective that we are individual human beings that do not in any way, shape, or form correspond to the legal constructions that have been placed before us, so that in a court of law, where there's the gold fringe around the flag to indicate admiralty law, basically we just have to institute common law and invoke common law in order to get around those types of legal fictions that have been created, and thus to once again reassert our real personhood.
No, but do you know where common law really comes from?
Please tell us.
If you look at all the great case law here in the United States, and we've had some really good case law, and this is a good country and a great country in many regards. The case of Reed versus Covert, which is the one I cite often, that's from 1957. The case was originally heard before the Supreme Court in 1956. And you know, this is common law. This is something that was made through the courts where the people fought for their rights and did it in a civil fashion. That's why I ask people to step forward and try to help me in my situation in confronting what the Coast Guard is a self-declared, you know, special branch of military that saying it can now administer civilian affairs, and help me set the law and say, no, you cannot do this. It's already there in this case, Reed versus Covert. But Mrs. Covert was the wife of a service member serving in England, an American service member serving in England. He was killed, murdered. She was blamed with it by our own military, of course. Somebody in the military who might have done it, Maybe she did do it, but they prosecuted her within a military tribunal. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court in 1956, U.S. Supreme Court. They ruled that, no, this is okay, that's fine. And then, and what happened was her father, one man, got involved for the love of his child. Stepped forward, got the Solicitor General and the Attorney General, who works for the Solicitor General in this instance to, you know, defend the Constitution and the rights of the people. He convinced him that this case was so important that the Solicitor General got involved, Attorney General was involved and got recruited by the Solicitor General. This is under the Eisenhower administration, and Korean War and other things are going on, and it's just after World War II, and we've got nuclear threat with, you know, I think Russia had probably just set off a nuke in mid-50s. And he's able to, in that time period, and in the midst of all of this, advocate for not only his own daughter, but understanding that in the principles, the things that we all strive for and fight for, and justice and more, that he could not allow this to stand. He got these people involved. They fought for a rehearing in 1957. Hugo Black put out the majority decision, overturning themselves. This is one of the few, if not only, times that the Supreme Court, the same seating of the same Supreme Court, has overturned itself a year later. And they said that, you know, basically, we can't let this stand. And they went all the way back to the Magna Carta of 1215 AD, coming over from England, you know, many people's forefathers, and what was created under common law in England, that our military is never to suborn civilian authority, that the military is never supposed to be in charge of and especially adjudicate or administer civilian affairs to try this woman for murder. And the bar is set very high at murder. If the military cannot get to a civilian for murder, they surely can't get to them for an infraction or a speeding violation or burglary or anything else. So we have, and this is case precedence here in the United States, and it's still controlling law. But what's important about this case is so broad. It's not just about military tribunals. It's also saying in this case, and this is Supreme Court case precedence, it is also saying that any agreements like NAFTA, CAFTA, World Trade Organization, or IMF, must, because they are a creature of the Constitution, they must abide by and be suborned to the Constitution. So the Bill of Rights applies in any and all, you know, whether it be a SOFA, which is a status of forces agreement that we sign with foreign nations, or NAFTA, or agreements in the, you know, United Nations or World Trade Organization or anywhere else, they have to be in compliance with the U.S. Constitution. And also in this decision, it's such an important decision, and I've cited it in my own case, but, you know, they're trying to say I'm crazy and basically ignoring anything that I cite and try to force me under a psychological examination before hearing on the merits and more. They even had a Coast Guard officer there who testified. This is a Coast Guard officer in uniform, commissioned officer, testifying that I am delusional, that I was born with several diseases and more. I never met the guy, never talked to him, never interviewed him. He didn't have the right to have any access to any of my medical records. The Coast Guard stole them and more. But in this case of Reed versus Cover from 1957, they also ruled that the executive branch is not supposed to have a competing system of courts to the Article III independent judiciary. The Supreme Court put their foot down and said, look, we're the courts, not the executive branch. All of these administrative courts, all of these military courts, all of these admiralty courts are not real courts. The executive branch is not supposed to be carrying on. They can have hearings, they can have investigations, they can take evidence, but they're really supposed to open the doors and take any and all evidence. Whether it be the 911 Commission, which was not the special master for the 9/11 Commission hearings, or I'm trying to think of the end, a special master, Kenneth Feinberg. I brought up about Kenneth Feinberg, how he's the Pazar. Kenneth Feinberg was the special master for 9/11. He was the guy who carried on for the trust fund payments to the beneficiaries of the trust fund and did everything to ensure that the beneficiaries did not get paid, so that as much money was held in this trust fund as possible so they could come in and raid it. He did the same thing with Dow Corning, with Monsanto, with asbestos, and also Agent Orange. And, you know, they waited and delayed till Vietnam vets who were affected by Agent Orange died, so no one was paid the benefit. They would play games to make sure that there was no successor, and the money would stay in the trust fund. They'd come in and raid it later. That's how these guys are getting rich. I'm trying to think of where.
Let's try to bring this back to the overall issue of monarchy and monarchical control, because you can look at people like.
And I'm sorry, and thanks for doing that. Is that like the court that I'm trapped in is a court of the king? It's a privy council. It's a star chamber. When the executive branch subjugates the legislature, which it's done under the Homeland Security and Patriot Act and more, and the judiciary, we are living in a kingdom. We're living in a serfdom. They're supposed to be separate and co-equal branches of the government under the doctrine of separation of powers that created the Article 1 legislature that makes the laws, the Article 2 executive that executes, that doesn't mean kill the laws, that executes and enforces the laws, and the Article 3 independent judiciary that's supposed to settle any and all disputes over any interpretation of the laws. And that's not what we have now.
Certainly, yeah, exactly. All right, well then can I get your take on the way that some people see that the system has been set up? For example, if you look at Professor Carol Quigley, he was a Georgetown professor of history, name-checked by Bill Clinton as one of his mentors, who had access to the CFR's private records for, I believe, 2 years of research and ended up publishing a number of volumes, including The Anglo-American Establishment and Tragedy and Hope. And basically, he placed the current system that we're living in to the will and testament of Cecil Rhodes, who left a will bequeathing his treasure to go towards funding a secret society roundtable group that would extend it to other countries for the specific purpose of furthering the British Empire. I'm wondering what you think about that.
He was a monarchist. He was a devout monarchist.
Exactly. So, I mean, is the indication then that is still the same level of control that's operating today, or does it go even further back in the past, or is there a different level operating in our current situation?
I think it's gotten much worse, because I think we did have some independence. I believe that we did. I don't believe our founding fathers were a bunch of crooks that were trying to deceive us all. When you look at what they did, like with the Third Amendment and more, I believe that they really tried to, and people died, to declare not just independence, but to set up a limited constitutional democratic republic. Remember, a democratic republic, they go hand in hand. They're not supposed to be at odds with each other and at each other's throats. The after Adams, the next four presidents, the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth presidents, they all served 2 terms each. They were all members of the Democratic Republican Party. It was one party. So I believe that, you know, for a time, that we did have an honest government of by and for the people. That men, and many of these people were rich. Relatively speaking, you know, in this country, you go back to England and other places, and there's a lot of people with a heck of a lot more money than them. But they were well off. They were well educated. But they did see a vision, and they did try to set our country on the right course. And they did try to take all the things from the past and build upon them, not just.
But certainly not all of them. I mean, Hamilton actually advocated that Washington become a king.
Oh, right, and I don't like Hamilton at all, but guess who likes Hamilton?
Many people, including the LaRouche Knights.
Your BP National Incident Commander, former Commandant Admiral Fat Allen. Yeah, because he knows and understands that Hamilton set up the Revenue Cutter Marine. He tried to set up an extra-constitutional executive branch of military that was not controlled by Congress, that was not controlled by even the president, that he controlled under the Treasury Department, and in response, the people and his own contemporaries broke it up. and handed it back over to local, not federal, control. Turned it back over to local custom houses. So when you see that, you see and understand that, well, you know, we had a lot of people that were standing up to all of these attempts by people who were, for the most part, Kissinger, I would throw in there, agents of the Queen. J.P. Morgan is another. Cecil Rhodes, remember that Bill Clinton was I'm an equal opportunity, truthsayer, I guess, against Republican or Democrat, whether it be Bush or Clinton or even Obama, that if they're not doing what is right, like Obama should be involved in what's going on with the Coast Guard and Homeland Security and drawing it into the Navy, militarizing it completely under and subordinate to the Navy under DOD, and then saying, look, okay, you're here, and putting the thumb down on them, and then demilitarizing the Coast Guard, putting them back out there as a civil service, and making it clear in law, you guys are never and will never be again. You will never be brought into the military. You are and will always be a Federal Maritime Police Force. If we need people in the military, we will go somewhere else. Because it's this gray area that's caused, you know, a lot of the problem. But Bill Clinton is a Rhodes Scholar. He was also nominated by the Queen for the highest appointment that she gives, which is the Lord, not a knight, like, you know, Reagan and others, but the Lord Warden of the Cinque Ports, the five southern ports in England that they used to, you know, hold their kingdom with. George Herbert Walker Bush was knighted by the Queen. That title has been passed on to his son, George W. Bush. We have this propensity now for not only George W. Bush to take over his father's seat, albeit a couple a president in between or two, but we have like Congressman Duncan Hunter Sr. passing his seat to his son, Congressman Duncan Hunter Jr. That is royalism in its highest form.
Well, going back to that, when was George H.W. Bush knighted?
When did it happen? It was after he was president and out of office.
It would certainly have to be, wouldn't it?
I think it was in the mid or late 1990s.
Are you sure it was actually knighted? Or just made an Order of the Garter or whatever?
No. Well, some of the, you know, the Order of the Knights of Malta.
Right.
Reagan was knighted. Greenspan, who he brought in. Remember what Reagan, he not only attacked the professional air traffic controllers and used the military to do it, he used men and women in uniform, military air traffic controllers, to take over the seats and jobs and positions of union members, civilians, professional air traffic controllers, who he pink-slipped, 13,500 civilians, replaced them with the military to not only break the back of the union, but fire 13,500 civilians and replace them with military personnel. Think about that. And we forget this, but he also brought in Greenspan as the head of the Federal Reserve, or Greenspan brought in him, however you want to look at it. But Greenspan was also knighted. So was George Herbert Walker Bush. So was Colin Powell. So was Norman Schwarzkopf. So was Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy smuggled Dewar's whiskey in from Canada, helped by the Queen, Crown, Royal Families of Canada, constitutional British, you know, monarchy, member nation state of, smuggled Dewar's whiskey in during Prohibition, warehoused it till Prohibition ended, and was sitting on a treasure trove that had been bequeathed to him by the Queen. That's why this is coming from our founding fathers. We're not talking a generation or a couple generations down the road, their children and people who've forgotten from, you know, what they fought about and why they fought it. They passed something called the Titles of Nobility Act in 1806. Because of it, Britain, England, the United Kingdom, came into the United States in the War of 1812 and burned the administrative records that were in the White House. They burned the White House because it was our hall of administrative records at the time, to destroy all of the records of passing the Titles of Nobility Act that took away the rights of citizenship for anyone and everyone, not only tied to a foreign, but especially royal kingdom.
Well, I must admit, just doing a cursory check online, it seems that you're absolutely right. The Knight Commander Grand Cross of the Order of the Bath is an honorary knighthood which has been given to George H.W. Bush and Reagan, as well as many, many other people like Colin Powell and all sorts of people in the American hierarchy, I guess, of
but
the American monarchy.
It. Yeah, James, they use the Queen also knights penguins. And if I was a British soldier or a subject, I'd be pissed because it's, you know, making it as if it's not even important. It's a joke. But they do this intentionally. These people are very sophisticated in what they do and how they do it. They understand human nature and people's, you know, intellect and how it works. They knight penguins and people like Elton John, but, you know, Elton John, I believe, I'm thinking if it was Elton John or, because I think Elton John is English, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe so.
But they're knighting English subjects, and people go, oh, they knight Elton John or whatever, and they knight penguins, you know, as if it's a joke and as if it means nothing. It means a lot. It meant a lot to our founding fathers here in the United States, to the point many of them, not all of them, people like Hamilton was a loyalist. He was a royalist. He wanted to use what was set up, and like you even said, they fought over the issue of whether Washington should serve into death, you know, his entire life, and be made His Excellence or king. They really wanted, there was people like Hamilton who believed that the system we set up was to elect a king rather than elect a representative, to elect an equal, to elect one of us, of, by, and for the people, to serve a limited term, do his job under the law, and move on. Even pensions for congressmen and senators used to be they would get a full pension for serving one term. Now it's a career. They did that intentionally so that people would get their full pension for serving one term in Congress or the Senate so that they could go on and do something else. Look, you've already got your pension. You're set up. Please move on. It was an encouragement for people to move on. And now we've got, you know, the legislature itself trying to put out quote-unquote term limits, and it's a good old boy system on not only steroids, but on acid and mushrooms at the same time. And I hate to use that analogy, but that's why our world is so twisted, because it has become so nepotistic. There is no new blood coming in. They won't allow it. There's a glass ceiling to disallow, you know, like even I brought up about Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Thad Allen. He not only is a great and devout follower of Alexander Hamilton, for obvious reasons, in the Revenue Cutter Marine. And they try to say that this is the oldest Marine service in the United States. Well, it's not. The United States Merchant Marine was formed in 1775, a full year before we declared independence and fought a Revolutionary War, because our founding fathers knew it was about commerce, trade, transportation. That gives you the revenues. That gives you taxes or tariffs, that gives you the means or the reason to have a military to protect the commerce, trade, and transportation. Not, you know, to where we're using the military now and it's become bigger. We don't even have much of a merchant marine, like I've mentioned before. 97% of our cargo coming into and leaving the United States is now controlled through Lloyd's of London, England. There's a bunch of international, like the IMO and others, that are these international, it's an international maritime organization, that are controlled out of London, England, the British monarchy, that, oh yeah, guess what, happens to be German as well. And when you look at that, I think even in Revelations or in the Bible, it talks about the two kings that will, you know, rule in end times. Well, you've got a royal family, and I'm not a Bible thumper or, you know, going there, but there's a lot of truth in all of this folklore, whether it be, you know, finding the city of Troy because of the Iliad and other stories, and actually really finding it buried under, you know, eight other cities or whatever. There's a lot of truth in people's verbal stories that we've passed down through the millennia. And so it is with, you know, even the Bible. But these two quote-unquote kings, they're both German. Even this goes back to, I think, Philip and also not Duke Ferdinand, who was assassinated as a member of the House of Habsburg at the start of World War I, but King Ferdinand. to where even the royal family in Russia, the Tsar, is related. They're German.
Well, that's right. So, I mean, is there significance to the fact that it stems from Germany, or is it just the fact that this family, obviously the royalty of Europe, are all related and inbred?
Well, but that is it. That is the difference between this, whether it's coming from Germany or not, because now they've created this worldwide super state, that the Rainbow Coalition of the Royalists or Fascists, because they use fascism and corporatism as a way of pushing their ends. You know, if Walmart comes to town, what happens to mom and pop? All these little mom and pop shops are shut down. It becomes a castle to where, look, you work for us or you don't work, and you leave, and we get your house for, you know, pennies on the dollar. Sorry, that's the way it is. It's the same mindset. It's the same way of thinking. We just look at it differently because there's no horses, there's no knights, there's no jousting, there's no castle and moat. But it really is virtually the same thing. It hasn't changed.
Well,
and we fought.
I'd like to find out why do you think that the English branch of the House of Windsor, the Saxe-Coburg-Gothas, why do you think they are at the sort of the apex of the pyramid of the royalty? Because as I understand, although I don't have the documentation to back me up on this, pretty much every other royal family pledges allegiance to the queen, even the Emperor of Japan.
Yeah, but I think that the Queen of England is more of the thoroughfare. They're the, you know, the puppet, the titular head that's put out there, where it's really coming from Germany. And I'm talking like the Habsburgs and others. When you really start to look into, and this is one of the things I wanted to bring up, that the company that owns and controls or got the contract for the New World Trade Center for the elevators is ThyssenKrupp. ThyssenKrupp have been making, you know, Krupp's been making cannons since the 1500s. They're a weapons and warship manufacturer. So is Thyssen. Thyssen and Krupp are now married into the Habsburg family. After 9/11, they end up somehow, you know, quo bono, with a contract, an enormous contract for basically the vertebrae or the spine or the central nervous system for this new World Trade Center tower. How does that happen when you've got... This is a Nazi corporation. It hasn't changed. It's still, you know, I've had people attack me and say, oh, well, that's the brilliance of the Marshall Plan and whatever. No, it's not. This is the brilliance of people like Martin Bormann, who outsourced that company, corporation, took it out of Germany before it fell, took all the assets, resources, patents, and more, and then used it as a fingerling, you know, sent out to the world to grow and take the money that it used from the war and the industrialization to other nations.
Well, that's right, and we do see so many of the Nazi corporations that were enriched and empowered under that regime continue today, and seemingly with unbesmirched reputations, even though they're directly descendant from what all the atrocities of the war. And we can think of pharmaceutical companies and car manufacturers and all sorts. Again, why Germany?
Whether it's, you know, taking off of the concept for the movie or the TV series Highlander, that there can only be one, that, you know, whether they want to be the quote unquote master race as these royals, because they're using their own people, they're using Germans, and Germans they're very sophisticated, very smart, very civilized. If you look at like the fall of Rome, the majority of the Roman army was German before it fell. A lot of the technology and resources and assets went back to Germany when it fell and was taken apart. That's why Germany is such an engineering powerhouse, because they ended up with a lot of this stuff from the Roman Republic.
Right, and of course the Romans ultimately fell to the Visigoths and the other Germanic invaders.
They're using the same tactics. I'm glad you brought that up, because the Vandals and the Visigoths is exactly what they're trying to do with the Mexicans and or immigrants, where they use, because in the instance of the Vandals and the Visigoths, the German royal families used the Vandals and Visigoths to overrun the Italian Empire to the point where they had to be promised up to 2/3 of crops and more to quell the unrest and the rebellion. so that people who were living there had to give up two-thirds of their property to all these people who moved in and just basically took over.
That does sound like a very interesting parallel to what's happening today in the United States, isn't it?
It's the same tactics. And that's why if people study history and they understand what's going on, they can understand and see how it was fought in the past. See how, you know, right now we should not have the taxes that we have, personal taxes at all, period. We used to have tariffs that ran 100% of our government. And Hamilton was one who tried to, you know, impose and take the tariffs, turn them around as a weapon, and take them back at the people with the revenue cutter marine. But it was taken away from him, broken up, given back to local custom houses, and the custom houses used that to go after smugglers and people who were trying to bring in, whether it's tea from England, and to try to put our, you know, people growing tea and more here in the United States, or even, you know, cabinetry and furniture manufacturers here, and put them out of business, just like Fuji has done in the past with flooding our markets with film to take over the market share and to put film manufacturers out of business here in the United States. And this is coming from China is a and has been for a long period of time, whether the Chinese believe it or not, or whether the world believes it or not, it has been an instrumentality of the royal families from England and Germany for quite some time. And it is now being used once again, and this is where, you know, the next confrontation is not going to be us and China, it's going to be the European Union and Russia, and Russia I don't think will be part of it, and us, and it'll be the United States, Canada will be in somewhere, whether it's assimilated and becomes part of this new North American Union or not, and South America, and Asia, not under Japan, but under China, to where we'll have a new world war with new weapons. Because the people that are behind this leapfrog technology and wealth in times of war. You look at in Dresden, where Warburg, the place was carpet bombed, flat. I mean, there was not a stick sticking up. His building, and this, you know, is the rumor, or the folklore that comes out of it. But you have to wonder why, if this is true or not, why people would say this. And it's a sign of the awesome power that Warburg had. And you can look into who Paul Warburg and others were. They were instrumental in the creation of the Federal Reserve and Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and more, and World War I and World War II, that his buildings in Dresden weren't touched. Everything else was flat. But his bank buildings and more in Dresden weren't touched. And whether that's put out to make people scared or whatever, that kind of folklore, whether it's real or not, if it's real, it's like, whoa. If it's not, it's still kind of like, wow, why would people say something like that, except maybe just as a form of folklore to show truly how much power these individuals had in this day and still,
yeah,
as
and still have. And that's right. Kind of the point, that a lot of these people still do wield extreme, incredible amounts of power as some of these people's direct offspring. But I think there's a difference between the level of understanding of who the people in society who were in charge 100 years ago and who are now. I think that level of understanding has deteriorated, obviously,
well,
on purpose.
Even their nature, though. Have you seen the movie, The Girl with the Rose Tattoo, I think is the name of it?
No, I haven't.
Go see that. It goes into the Wenger family, which is, I would assume, a fictitious family, but it's probably coming from, you know, real life. Fiction imitates life, and life is oftentimes stranger than fiction. But it gets into this family, and they were Nazis. I mean, and the family, almost like in our own Civil War here in the United States, where you had members who were on the north side and members who were on the south, who were at each other's throats. Not only did they have America in a Civil War situation again, and at each other's throats, whether it be about job or security or national security or the Koran or whatever, and they're doing this to break down the United States, bring us to our least common denominator, and then marry us with Canada and Mexico and create this new super state, so that when there is no more America, it's basically bankruptcy, and they get to decide, you know, where all the wealth and all the assets and resources go. But this Wenger family, on the one side, they were Nazis, and the guy, you really got to go see the movie. But it shows the kind of people, good and bad, that can live within these extremely powerful, you know, the Koch brothers, you know, with there's, well, I think they're into just about everything, steel, whatever, oil and more. You know what I'm talking about, right? The Koch brothers. It's K-O-C-H. I'm not sure if there's an E.
It's not ringing a bell.
They're like, they're multi-billionaires. They're discretionary money. They've got billions of dollars that they could just throw away on any given day. These are one of the most influential and powerful families. They're funding and inciting a lot of the civil unrest and people like Glenn Beck, the family that's behind Fox, one of the royal families from Saudi Arabia, one of the kings or princes, is I think he owns a majority stake in Fox Networks.
Yes, that's right.
He's a royalist.
Yep.
Right. So when you start seeing this, that's why I bring up not only, you know, World War One, World War Two, but as Philip Bobbitt talks about in his book, The End of the Long War, the end of the Long War was what started by, you've got bookends on either end, World War One as the beginning of it, and the fall of the wall in Berlin and reunification of Germany. Think about it at that point in time when Reagan was talking about, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, you know, bring down this wall. There was no European Union. There was no Euro. We were a very vibrant and productive country, nation, people. And now within 10 years, a little bit more, there is a European Union. There is a Euro. A lot of money has migrated to this new currency. The dollar is under attack as the world reserve currency, whether petro or chemical or otherwise. And our country as a nation, you know, even the issue of issuing our own currency, all of these issues that plagued our forefathers and plagued our, you know, our ancestors, all those who came before Jackson and others who fought over the issue of whether we should have a central bank or not, whether we should have, because if you, it, I mean, that's why we have state borders. You know, there should be no central federal or private bank, because how can the central government carry on oversight of the states when it's in business and competing with the states? And that brings up an important point. Let me get this out: is the Coast Guard, Homeland Security, is now documenting or registering private and commercial vessels. You got a motorboat, sailboat. The Coast Guard is doing what they're, it's registering it, but they're documenting it. They're not charging for it. You can either have your boat registered that you have to pay fees for to the state, that goes to the state coffers for building ferries and waterways and bridges and dredging and more to maintain the state waterbound infrastructure and how to get there and back and more. Lights and you know, like sea buoys or whatever for coming into port and even ports and more. But that money's not going into the state now. It's not going anywhere. The federal government, Homeland Security, is not charging for documenting vessels. It's setting up this large national central database. The Coast Guard owns and controls what is called the National Driver Registry, which is all state drivers. So why does the Coast Guard have this? And think about it. Well, I mean, beyond the military tribunals that I'm complaining about and everything else, this National Driver Registry came about because of Exxon Valdez and Joe Hazelwood having a drunk driving, to where now if you get a drunk driving on your boat, you could lose your driver's license to get to work. Although a lot of people would say, well, they're not really necessarily equated, but it's like double jeopardy. So now, and I've had this in my own situation, where because I got a reckless driving, I was speeding and they bumped it up to reckless and, you know, came after me, whatever. And I was doing like 15 or 20 miles over on the highway. And nowadays, if you're doing like, you know, that's considered automatic reckless or whatever. They've gone way overboard. But they put me on, the Coast Guard did. The Coast Guard got a red flag on this. You have to report upon it yourself to them. And you know, they knew about it because I was upping my license or trying to upgrade my license. And this is a license to work, to be employed as a federal maritime officer, as an engineer. I'm not steering the vessel, but I am helping with navigation because of propulsion. But the Coast Guard refused to allow me to upgrade my license for a year as a penalty for getting a reckless driving or speeding ticket. Think about that. That's like being a civil engineer, and because you get, and this goes into fascism, the insurance rackets, they think that you're a quote-unquote higher risk, so they're really coming down on you hard every which way and you know they possibly can to make to correct your behavior.
Absolutely.
To the point where,
yeah.
Well, but it's administrative. It's punitive. It's double jeopardy to not the point where you're being tried twice, but you're getting two impositions against you that on the one hand, you have nothing to say about it. You can't even get into a hearing. Look at what they're doing with me, where I've got a branch of military prosecuting me for, you know, allegedly being medically, mentally incompetent, trying to prove it. And over the last 8 years, I've not had a hearing to where I could get in and say what is going on.
All right, well, let's bring this back to the monarchical aspect of it, because I think playing devil's advocate, something that a lot of people will not go along with, is the idea that it all traces back to monarchies per se, or the monarchical ideal. A lot of people will point to the power behind the throne being someone like the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers. What would you say to people who don't necessarily tie that in?
It's a synergistic effort. There's different kinds of banks. There's banks that we think of, like financial instruments. You go and make deposits and more. There's also banks like the military itself, like military contracting, federal contracting. That's enormous. Insurance is another kind of bank. You know, and they basically split up, whether it's the Italians or the Anglo-Saxons or the Jews or whomever. Everybody has their little racket, whether it be a church, whether it be Congress, to where they're, you know, centralizing and federalizing everything, rather than carrying on oversight to limit and preclude corruptions and allow the states to be the sponsors of benefits, you know, for their citizens. They have centralized everything, and this is why people fought Hamilton on a lot of this. But the centralization is exactly what King George did to the colonists, to where they had taxation without representation. And that representation, little that they had, was imposed upon them from afar through the extension of the military. And we see that very same, it's not, you know, if you, most people who are educated, who believe in a democratic republic, a democracy, a republic, you know, system of self-governance, don't arise to become dictators. They arise in the mindset of Christ to be a servant. Sure, to hopefully make a living, to feed their families and, you know, be secure in their position, but to basically protect the law and other citizens, because they do it because they know and understand that, well, if I don't do this and I don't protect other people, then this could all come back on me, like I brought up about my own situation, that, you know, using this as case precedence, if people don't step forward to help out, they will do like they did in Germany and other places, use this under the common law to do the very same thing to you and other people that they're doing to me.
So in effect, fundamentally,
well,
this is a fight between ideologies and mindsets then.
Well, it is. And that's what I'm saying is that, you know, it's us or them, because it's 5% of the people or less. It's really less than 1%, and they control everything, and everyone else is basically just trying to be productive, make things. I mean, if we didn't have this system of royalism that we have, and it was actually put down as we believe it was in World War I and World War II, which it wasn't, the Habsburgs, because they've been appointed to positions, like the Habsburgs were on the council that formed the EEC, the European Economic Community, that devolved, and I say devolved into, and became the European Union. So all they needed is to get into a committee, a group, and they know, just like the mafia or organized crime, they know how to put an arm around somebody, buy them dinner, get them some hookers or whatever, and basically corrupt them.
Well, more importantly, they know how to operate out of centers of power behind the scenes, like the Bilderberg Group, that's admitted purpose since the 1950s was the creation of the European Union and has worked. And obviously, there's people like the Queen of the Netherlands who are regular attendees of the Bilderberg Group, so it certainly fits in right. that way as well.
Well, but do you see people who have arisen from, you know, of, by, and for the people who have went to school, they're not coming from any, you know, real background, that are doing this on a world scale, on a world level, that are forming all these groups and coming together and deciding, you know, how things should be?
Well, when they do, they generally get shot in the head.
Like, right, and even like John F. Kennedy, a lot of people, even with, you know, this is kind of the smokescreen, like with Joe Kennedy, his father, towards whiskey and more. You know, he was an agent for the Queen.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the thing was that John F. Kennedy was actually starting to buck against the system, and I think that's why he
yes.
had to be gotten rid of.
I think he actually part, and this is why we have this rule, and this we didn't create this rule, and this is why they take people like, you know, Stalin from Georgia and put him in charge of Russia, or people like Hitler from Austria and put him in charge of Germany. People that don't care or even care less, and that will use the power of the collective to even impose themselves even more upon their own peers from their own country. It's the same old racket. It's the same old game. It's the same people that it has been. And it is our fault to a degree for not being, as our founding fathers said, you know, I think Franklin was asked, you know, what kind of governance or government did you give us? And his response was, it's a republic if you can hold on to it. And it is of the people, by the people. And the only way that it is for the people is when it is of and by the people.
And that's right now, so true. That's so true. I mean, it requires active participation. There's absolutely no way that liberty can be maintained at the price of nothing, of sitting back and eating cheeseburgers and drinking beer.
Yeah, and they get away with this, these well-connected, very influential, very powerful families like the Davis, Walker, Bush family, because people like in my own instance, they won't stand up, or they won't stand up enough to say, no, this will not go on in our country to any individual. I mean, look at the wars that are going on right now. We had tens of millions of people in the street before the war in Iraq was launched. Remember the whole concept of human shields and all these people and all the, you know, furor over trying to prevent the war?
I certainly do. Almost like it was yesterday.
Yeah, and it's scary because even World War II, and this is what I've been trying to, they put guys like Admiral Brewer in charge of the LA Unified School District. Admiral Brewer was an admiral in, you know, 35-year pension, military, quasi-military federal service in military sealift command. They put him as LA Unified School District Superintendent. Villaraigosa did this, Mayor Villaraigosa. He fought for the nominating authority to name the superintendent. They did this because they wanted to turn LA Unified School District, the second largest school district in the nation, into a nursery for soldiers and sailors. So these guys are preparing us all for war, and if we do not become active in being the solution to it in peace, and what I was trying to say is if we didn't have the system of royals that we have now and have had for, you know, forever, we would be off this planet. We would already, because we would not be using all this money for war, we would be using it for commerce, trade, transportation. How come we do not have a magnetic levitation train system here in the United States on the east and west corridors and on the north and south corridors? I mean, that would help Canada. If we had our own maglev train system, you know, bullet train, on the northern corridor, just think of how many Canadians could come across and use that.
Well, there is no doubt that certainly the system as it's set up today is not meant to benefit the average man or woman. It's meant to enslave them. And there's no doubt also that anyone who actually looks at the true history of America will know that the War of Independence was not won once and for all in 1776, but there's been a ongoing struggle for centuries between America and Britain and the Crown that's been attempting to influence the Americans by taking over their banking system, which they managed to accomplish in 1913. So I think anyone who looks at this... Well, yeah, please go ahead.
I was going to say real quick was J.P. Morgan, and I mentioned this before. He came to the United States prior to our Civil War. He helped incite the Civil War. He funded both sides of the Civil War. He profited from funding both sides of the Civil War. He took down American financial houses prior to, during, and after the Civil War, converted them back to Crown possessions. He was also instrumental in funding and starting General Electric, the world's largest weapons manufacturer, fifth largest corporation in the world, that owns and controls NBC. His son, J.P. Morgan Jr., signed the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, and J.P. Morgan was backed by his father, who was an English banker backed by the Crown. He was an agent for the Crown.
Well, that's right, and when he actually died, it was discovered that the vast majority of the Morgan fortune, in fact, was not Morgan's, and a lot of it stemmed back to the Rothschilds as well. So, there you go. Okay, well, again, we're winding up another incredibly interesting conversation. Obviously, we have a lot more to talk about, so I'm looking forward to having you back on next month. But again, why don't you tell people how they can access you and your work?
Well, I've got the radio program that you know of that you're going to be on tomorrow, Saturday at 9 p.m. Pacific time for an hour. The number on there and people can call in for this is 800-313-9443. The program was on Sundays. It's been moved to Saturdays at 9 p.m. Pacific time. And I also have two websites that have a lot of the documentation up there. It's not real clear. It's not real clean. You kind of got to dig through it. I apologize for that. But I don't think people can understand what I've been put through in the last 8 years in having a branch of military I'm not in pursue me and try to have me declared medically, mentally incompetent. But it's www.martiallaw911.com, MARTIAL911.com, and crossingtherubicon.org, crossingtherubicon.org. And I thank you, James. Really appreciate it.
Well, a fascinating conversation as always, Lieutenant Shine. Until next time, take care. Thank you for joining us.
Peace, guy. Take care.